Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Richard Caudray. Richard is the New York Times best-selling author of the Sandman Slim Supernatural Noir series. Sandman Slim was included in Amazon's 100 science fiction and fantasy books to read in a lifetime. Some of Richard's other books include The Everything Box, Hollywood Dead, and Butcher Bird. He's also written comics and is a photographer. Hey, Richard, how are you doing?
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
It's a real delight to connect with you again, Richard. Richard was being very modest in his bio because he was also an editor at the Whole Earth Catalog, Whole Earth Review, and worked at Wired for a while I was there. So we have long working relationship going way back, though we haven't talked to in many years.
Yeah, you helped me get in there.
Yeah. What was the book you edited for Whole Earth?
Reality Check, right?
Well, and Signal was the big one.
Signal.
Oh, Signal was the one of Whole Earth.
The Signal book. Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. What a fantastic book.
That was pre-Wired. That was Wired pre-Wired.
Yeah. The Whole Earth book, the Whole Earth issue, Kevin, that you did was kind of like a prototype for Wired from 1987. It really was.
It was missing the gloss.
Yeah.
And it was missing the people, which was what Louis Rossetto's brilliant idea was, to take all these ideas and tools and wrap them around people.
Yeah.
So
I liked it better without the people.
Actually, Richard has another impact on my life. He got me first interested in documentaries way before they were cool. And so we were doing this list of documentaries you should see, or documentaries that could be seen on VHS. Because until that moment, documentaries were just things that played in film festivals. And if you happened to be around when they were playing, you were lucky. But otherwise, there was really no way to see them. But some began to be available on VHS, and which started to collect them. And that was a inspiration for my True Films site.
And my
lifelong, obsession with documentaries.
That's so cool. Well,
we also discussed fake documentaries at that time too, if you remember.
Yes. Yeah. Fakementaries. Yes.
Yes.
Or mockumentaries sometimes.
Like Spinal Tap, you mean?
Well, and beyond. Spinal Tap and beyond. Mm-hmm. So we haven't had a chance to catch up recently, but Richard, you have some tools for us, and then we'll talk about some of your recent work.
Sure.
What's first on your list?
The first thing for me that's really helped me in the last year or so is the Evaluant Vertical Mouse. I've been in some car accidents, I've been in some motorcycle accidents, and just I have some nerve damage from those. So regular mouse didn't work for me. Trackballs didn't work for me. I used a trackpad for a long time. That didn't work for me after a while. And the vertical mouse has been a real, real lifesaver for me. It's a weird device. There's a big learning curve when you first get it. But I think it's a wonderful bit of technology.
And I know that there's different brands. In fact, we recently had someone recommend the Logitech vertical mouse. Have you tried that? Does that make any difference to you? How did you arrive on this one?
I haven't tried that one. This one had a really good reputation, so I just took a chance and went with this. I trust Logitech too. I'm sure it's a really good device.
So how long have you been using it, Richard?
About two books now. So
that's good.
Two books.
How long did it take you? Because the other guy we talked to, Rob, who has the Logitech one, said he's still kind of like dialing in his fine motor skills with it. Did it take a while? And do you feel really comfortable with it now?
Yeah, I feel comfortable with it now, but it was a good 2 weeks at first of being completely puzzled by it. Mm. And because you have buttons. There are like two buttons on one side and like three buttons on the other, and you kept hitting the wrong ones. And in the end, they're all really useful. But you really make a lot of mistakes at first, and mm-hmm. you're moving the device around incorrectly. It's a very frustrating process. I mean, it's like, you know, if you've ever used Photoshop, it's the same thing where it's just, you have this, you know, long line of tools on the side. You don't know their names. They're very mysterious. Even the icons don't necessarily match what they do. The vertical mouse is kind of the same thing. It's just a complete mystery at first. And like Photoshop, the best way to learn it is just to play with it.
Mm-hmm. And I see that the buttons are programmable too. Have you messed around with that, or are you just using the default?
No, I'm still using the default. Like once I dialed in the basics, I try to keep my technology as simple as possible. And I'm not big on going in and digging into things like modifying things like mice. I like to see what the thing can do on its own. You know, if I'm going to do something, I'll probably do a hardware hack. Mm-hmm. I had a weird one years ago where I actually used two mice, and I had one glued.
Tell me how that worked.
I had one glued to the side of my desk for clicking, and I had another one that I used in my other hand for moving.
And whoa,
that was great for years.
I love that.
But impractical when I moved.
Well, I'm not sure if I understand the advantage of separating those two. Two different hands, or you had to move? That's, huh. Were you using like your foot to do it?
No, my left hand, I had it glued on the side of the desk. So my left hand, I had it vertically glued to the side of the desk. So I would click with that one. This is another time when I was having some trouble with my wrists and hands.
Oh, I see. Okay. So that's another way out. So you actually made your own vertical mouse, so to speak.
I made my own vertical mouse. Exactly, man.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. And are you, do you use just one hand? Did you ever try changing hands?
No, I just use the one hand. I tried doing lefty, and it was a disaster. So I'm perfectly fine now, just using my right hand. And I think the programming would be great for, you know, if you're ambidextrous or if you were left-handed. I think that would really come in it would be very important.
Uh huh. Okay. Great.
All right. So, Richard, your next one is a digital version of the infamous Holga camera.
Yeah. This is a wonderful, wonderful device if you're a photographer. If you like photography that is imperfect, and I'm a big fan of that, the Holga is a great camera. I used to use a film Holga, but because you have no idea what you're going to get from a Holga from shot to shot, using film was incredibly expensive. Your traditional Holga is plastic. The viewfinder is virtually useless. The lenses tend to be cheap plastic. So the fun of the Holga was the mystery of it, taking a chance and never knowing what you were going to get. But it became incredibly expensive shooting whole rolls of film in which you got virtually nothing out of them. But the digital Holga, you can shoot away and it doesn't matter if you get things wrong. You can always go back and try it again. And if you shoot 50 shots and 50 of them are bad, all you've used is a little, you know, little bit of memory on a card.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so is this an actual camera? Is this an app for your phone? Or where I'm really confused about what it actually is.
Nope, it's an actual camera. You can order them online. I have three because, like Holgas, they're very delicate. If you drop it, it's gonna die.
And what's the size? How big are they?
It's like, boy, it's hard to describe it in terms of a modern camera. It's chunkier than a little point and shoot and smaller horizontally. It's like if you took a regular point and shoot and just kind of squeezed it in a bit and it kind of squeezed out the other way. It's sort of like it looks and functions like a toy camera. And in a lot of ways it is. because you have no real control over what you're going to get. But the pictures are, you can set it for black and white or color. I prefer black and white for me, especially if you're going to get weird off-center grainy shots. I think black and white is perfect and mysterious enough.
And does it take an SD card?
Yep, a regular little card. And takes a couple of AA batteries. And that's it. And you're ready to shoot. And if you have an old Holga, the flash from a regular old Holga will work on the digital Holga.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, okay.
What's cool is that the website, holgadigital.com, has an Instagram account. And so you can see actual shots that people have taken with the Holga Digital. And they're really cool looking.
Yeah, it's a crapshoot to know what you're going to get, and it's always fun. You know, when you really dial in a good shot, it's so exciting because it's nothing you could have planned. That's the fun part of the Holga, is what you get is always a surprise.
Yeah, and you can't see what you've gotten until you put your SD card in your computer and upload the files, right? Because there's no screen on it.
Exactly. I carry around an iPad to shoot so that I can, you know, I have the little dongle that lets you load in cards, and you just load it straight into the photo file on an iPad, and you can scan through them very quickly and see if the lighting is too dark or too light, and then you can make adjustments for that. So it's very fast to work with. And again, you don't waste endless amounts of time and money on film.
That's really cool.
As much as I miss film, you know, I love film photography.
And they're about $100, it looks like.
Yep, about $100. And they have extra lenses you can get for them, telephoto and a wide angle. And they all work just fine.
Great.
That's really cool.
That's cool. Okay.
So the next one you have is, tell us about it, My Passport. Oh, wireless hard drive.
It's a nice little drive. What it is, I'm very big on controlling my media. And I tour for my books, and I travel a lot. And I like to bring my media with me because I don't trust hotels. They have garbage, you know, channels on television. It's hard to stream things. So I'll just bring my own media. Now, the My Passport Wireless Pro, you can get several terabytes on there, and you can load on photos, music, movies. I tend to put on movies and television shows. And what it is, it's just a little streaming box. And you don't have to rely on hotel Wi-Fi because it uses Bluetooth. And it goes straight to your iPad.
That's so cool.
Or your phone.
So since you have you have your whole global jukebox in the sky that you carry with you, and you can just watch whatever you want to watch directly to your pad.
And do you have to plug it in to power, or how is it powered?
Yeah, you need to, you can run it off a battery, or you can plug it in.
Oh, it has a battery included.
Yeah, there's a little battery inside.
Oh, that's nice. Cool. And so you can just recharge it.
Yep. Absolutely. And it's about the size, if you remember the old, what were they called? The old Sony portable CD players.
Walkman's, the Discman.
The Discman. It's about the size of a Discman, yeah. A little fatter. Because you're talking about something that's, I think they go up to 5 terabytes. I think that's the top one.
But is it an SSD? Is it solid state?
Yep.
Okay. So it's very energy efficient. So it's also very rugged too.
It is rugged. It's a nice machine.
Do you have the 4 terabyte version?
Right now I just have the 2, and that does me just fine for traveling.
Yeah, you can hold load a lot on that.
Yeah, you can load a ton of stuff on that.
$165 on Amazon.
Huh, that's really cool. So the Bluetooth is a real thing there. So Richard, where, I mean, you don't have to answer this question, but where do you get all your movies and things? Are you, have you found a source that satisfies your taste in movies that you want to download to watch later on?
I'm still very old fashioned. I get discs. And so I'm very primitive, and I will rip those.
Oh, wow.
So tell us about how you rip them. What do you use to rip?
It's PavTube Byte Copy, which I've had really good luck with.
PAV?
PAV Tube.
Okay.
So I use Handbrake sometimes for some discs.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Handbrake's good if it's like you have trouble with a kind of simple one-click version to do it. Sometimes Handbrake will get it for you.
And this is working on Blu-ray as well as just a regular DVD?
No, Yes, you can rip Blu-ray and DVD.
And is it Windows and Mac or just Windows?
I use Mac. That's all I use this for.
Okay.
But of course, if you're a cop listening to this, I don't rip anything at all ever.
Right, of course not. This is just hypothetical.
For education purposes.
Yeah.
That is pretty old school. Going back to you're not going down to Pirate Bay or the Taurus or anything. My problem is I gave up the last computer that had a DVD reader in it. I would need to buy a DVD reader at this point.
But the thing is, you can get little plug-in DVD players and recorders for like $100 now. They're nothing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's really great. So, I love this idea of just having a Bluetooth infinitely deep storage that you carry with you. And I can, you know, I have a Samsung 4 terabyte for my photos. It's light enough that I never thought about loading it up with movies, but I probably should because I carry it with me everywhere I travel.
It's really great. I mean, when you're in a hotel or something late at night and you just want to, you know, they have garbage television or, you know, whatever, you have no control. That's the thing, is when you're on the road, you have no control of what anyone wants to give you. And I also use Plex, which is a media streaming service that lets me also do the same thing with my ripped movies and ripped television shows. I can stream those all over the house. And in theory, I can stream those to myself over the while I'm on the road. And it works sometimes. But hotel Wi-Fi can often be garbage.
When isn't it garbage?
So sometimes Plex doesn't work.
What Plex, how do you use Plex at home? I'm actually not that familiar with Plex. Explain what that is.
Plex is essentially a service that is a giant, think of it this way, it's a giant database that looks at all your ripped movies, all your ripped television, movie files. You can do music too. It's like a little media controller. So you can set it up through Roku. You can stream to your tablet. And it's very simple to use. You set it up and everything is there. It will download metadata for you. So you can see the covers of the DVDs and you don't have to look up the titles all the time. But you do need, you know, a decent connection to stream the films or the music.
And you say connection, you mean a wireless connection or do you mean like,
it's a wireless connection. Yep. Well, it's controlled through a laptop and then I can stream it wirelessly. Yeah. Through Roku or to a tablet. It's very, very nice. But again, you need a decent connection. And especially if you're at a hotel, like at a science fiction convention, the Wi-Fi is just garbage because everyone's using it. Mm-hmm. So that's why the My Passport Wireless Pro comes in. So you can have your media with you.
Cool.
So Richard, what's another one? You have, we were talking about DVDs and DVD players. One of the issues is that if you have any kind of taste in international movies and content, for some strange reason, they're often hard to play on devices that you buy in the US, but there's a workaround. Want to explain that?
Yeah, there are. Well, it's very easy to find region-free DVD players, or you can hack them. A lot of them. I used to have a very old cheap Chinese player, and it was well known that essentially it was built to hack. There were a few codes you would put in. The codes are almost like what you'd use on a game controller. It's like up, up, left, 3, 2, you know, and you hit it a few times. And the wonderful part was when you got to the screen where you could turn off the region codes, there would be a big message saying, "You're not supposed to be here." And you knew it was right. One click away from being able to turn off all the region controls. And right. So it's really easy to find region-free DVD players. Region-free Blu-ray is a whole other matter, because with DVDs, it's just changing the software. The region-free Blu-ray is a hardware hack, so you have to find them on the gray market. The funny part there is, it used to be very difficult, but now these are brave people, I suppose. They'll pop up on eBay and even Amazon now. If you search on region-free Blu-ray, you can get them through there. And I was very surprised to see them. I do weird searches like that every now and then, just to see where the technology is landing. And you had to go kind of underground a few years ago, but now I don't suppose law enforcement looks or cares, but they're much easier to find. And they don't cost that much more than a regular player. They used to be around, you know, $600-$800 because people were doing hardware hacks. Now you can get them in the range of $250 to $300.
Yeah. It used to be in the old days that the easiest DVD players to hack into region free were the cheapest, because they were going to basically be sold all around the world. And so they were kind of made to be played in any region. And it was just a little software change that would enable that. So it doesn't seem strange to me that the ones that are now region free and Blu-ray are probably also the cheapest too.
Actually, some of them are built on sort of mid-range DVD players. So they're not junk, which is really nice. So they actually, you get a really nice picture and really good sound. So that's the other part. That's why they used to be so expensive, is you take a robust machine and then you make it even better.
Mm-hmm. Region free. So the place to look for this is on eBay.
Yeah, you can find them these days. eBay is the best, but even check Amazon. I was shocked to see them there, but they do pop up.
Wow, people sneaking on. So Richard, in the couple of minutes we have left, why don't you tell us about your new novel that's out, The Grand Dark?
It's a big book for me. It's actually, literally, it's my longest novel. It's my most complex. It's a big step for me. I didn't want to be known as a pulp writer forever. The Grand Dark is much more serious book than I've ever written before. I've been obsessed with the Weimar period in Germany for many years. And so this is a dark fantasy riffing off the Weimar period. But being a fantasy, there are also robots and genetic engineering. And it's a very different kind of protagonist than I've written. I usually write very powerful, driven people. But this is about, you know, a 21-year-old bike messenger. He likes to take drugs. He likes to hang out with his girlfriend, who's a pretty actress. And he's really a very ordinary guy who gets sucked into a government conspiracy simply because of his own desire to be oblivious. I think it's as much as it's a fantasy, I think it would have been a very different book if I'd written at another time that wasn't, for instance, the Trump administration, where you see the darkness of the government and what it's capable of kind of closing in on ordinary people. And Largo, the protagonist, again, finds himself caught up in things he doesn't understand. It's his own simplicity, you know, the way, not to put down Trump voters, I think there's a simplicity to their logic in voting for someone like Trump. And I think Largo is the same way. And he finds himself in way over his head. So this isn't a dour book. This is a book with, like I said, robots, genetic engineering, secret submarine bases, action, adventure. But it's all couched in this story that's of a city between two wars, and they know the second war is coming, and there's nothing they can do about it. So they are extraordinarily decadent, trying to get in as much sensory joy as possible before the next war destroys them.
That sounds great. Wow. And we're recording this on June 11th. The book came out today, right? I mean,
yes, it came out this morning.
Congratulations.
Man.
That's awesome.
Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you very much. It's getting the best reviews I've ever had. I mean, I got a Start review in Kirkus, a great review in Publishers Weekly.
Great.
I'm really happy.
That is so good.
Congratulations. It paid off.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I hope this inspires you to keep writing long. I just finished Neal Stephenson's book. He gets away with making 800-page book, so I hope that inspires others to go long form.
Well, this one's 432 pages, so it's a half of a Stephenson, which I think is a good thing.
Exactly.
And, the Kirkus blurb is a wildly ambitious and inventive fantasy from an author who's punching above his weight in terms of world building and winning. That's great.
Wow.
You can't get better than that.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations, Richard. It's really great to have you and catch up. And I'm looking forward to your book. And thanks for sharing these really cool tools with us.
Thank you very much. It's been great to be here.